Lunatic Mania!
Hey kids, it's time for you, Baloo, Kit Cloud Kicker, Rescue Rangers, Darkwing Duck, DuckTales, and my personal favorite, Goof Troop. So strap in, grab your snacks, and... Enough of that, peasant! It is I, Lord Ragemaster. I have returned thanks to a magic spell, brought back to your world to issue this warning to those who bear ill. The gargoyles are coming. Beware the hallowed edifices in which you entreat to your god, for they are protected by creatures of the night. For years they were frozen in stone, bestowed by a curse. But now, the spell is lifted, and they live again! Stone by day, warriors by night! Beware, evildoers, and those with vile, villainous hearts, for your deeds will no longer be hidden in the darkness. Beware the night, for it is now your time to fear as well, for the night belongs to the gargoyles.
Sci-Fi Melody, Symptom 73, and Disney pulled from Writer's Beer. Sci-Fi Saturday Mornings Month continues as this week we discuss more cartoons from our childhood. Well, not our childhood. I was pretty close to being a full-grown man when this
my childhood
TV show came out because I'm old.
Yeah.
Shove it, Corey. Yeah, we know you're younger than all of us. You'll get old someday, too.
Probably not.
It's not far around the corner for you, man. 30's coming.
I got four kids. You're right.
All falls apart.
Because of four kids, you've already aged prematurely.
Right.
So,
right.
If we were to do this in actual human years, you're probably 48.
Right.
Most likely.
You're 25. I'm 37. But the children have aged you to 43. It's just that simple. As you can see on the Facebook live feed, we have a guest in the studio this week. So we have Arch, and we also have Arch's kid.
Yeah, so this one's not Corey's.
No.
Arch, thanks for joining us this week.
Normally,
you're on the other side of this feed on Facebook Live talking to us during the show, but Thomas couldn't make it this week, so we brought Arch in to fill in that fourth chair.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
So, we're talking about gargoyles this week. And
we are gargoyles.
All right, wait. Before we continue, we got to address the elephant in the room. How did you get back here, and why did we let you back here?
What, me?
No.
No,
you
there was a Lord Ragemaster appearance in the intro.
You know who we're
talking
to.
I you know, it's a weird thing. I was just sitting here, and then I suddenly I just felt out of it for a minute, and now he's back. Trust me, Lord Ragemaster is not in, but I don't know when he might be back.
So what he's telling us is that the portal is broken and we need to go fix it.
So you're saying there's a battle for your soul between you and Lord Ragemaster, and you're not sure who's going to win.
Dear God, I hope not.
That's what it sounds like.
It sounds pretty bad.
At any moment, Lord Ragemaster could appear.
When you put it that way, it sounds pretty bad.
All right, well, we'll hope that we can keep Lord Ragemaster under wraps so we don't lose Ragemaster.
Right.
But... Gargoyles.
I don't want to go back to that realm anyway.
This was actually a Disney cartoon.
Yeah, that's the coolest part about this. This is why we call this when Disney pulled a Riker's beard. Because if you don't know what Riker's beard is, it's a term that's used to discuss, what is that, season 3?
Yeah, season 3. Well, season 2 is when Riker grew the beard, which is why the term never makes sense to me, because it's season 3 when Next Generation became awesome.
All right, but
it generally means Riker grew a beard and Star Trek The Next Generation became awesome.
Not, you know, correlation, not causation, doesn't affect causation, but still, it's two associations. And so this is the moment when Disney cartoons really took a turn for the better. I mean, I remember when I found out this was a Disney cartoon, all I could think of was, really? No way. And then it is.
I mean, this is, and the reason we say this is not the happy-go-lucky Mickey Mouse.
No, this is a dark,
it did
dark
not
story.
Match the other Disney cartoons at all. Even Tailspin, which had some dark moments, pales in comparison.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this show is very dark. It addresses very adult content. It's definitely not a typical Disney show. There's not always a happy ending to these shows. In fact, the first episode, which is really five episodes made into one, or I mean, I'm sorry, one episode made into five different episodes.
What's that? The first one?
Yeah, Awakening.
Oh, that was like a movie, basically.
Five parts. Yeah, it's a 2.5 hour pilot
basically.
for a show for 7-year-olds.
Oh, right.
You know, that's pretty impressive. You know, it's really dark. It starts with all the gargoyles basically getting killed, and then the Magus or magician or whatever, the wizard, banishes all of Goliath's friends into being stone until their castle reaches higher than the clouds. Mm-hmm. And Goliath going, cast the spell one more time on me because I don't want to be alone.
It just starts. I mean, you're pitching this as an after school. This ran from 1994 to 1997, originally as part of Disney's after school lineup.
I think they were aiming for a large. Honestly, and unless you see something different, Scott, I wouldn't be surprised if what they did there was to aim for a higher aged crowd with that show. Because Disney Afternoon obviously is a very limited demographic. And they probably were really aiming for the 12 to 17 year old some such. Because when you look at something like Tailspin or Darkwing Duck, very kiddish. And if you're Disney trying to do a broader appeal, you're not going to do it with that so much.
No,
so.
And I mean, this had to be targeted towards an older audience, and there's no two ways about it. I mean, one of the first lines in there, they're talking about Xanatos, and then he's talking about how you get people to work for you, and he says, you pay a man enough, he'll walk barefoot in hell.
I could not believe that. That was so amazing. And the show's rating was Y7 at the time.
Yeah.
Because I used to watch it. And you want to know something that's, at least for me as a kid, whenever you found that show that had that like little swear word slipped in, I always thought those were the best shows.
In the world.
Because I'm like, dude, my parents don't know I'm watching this, and this is so bad. Like, well, Dragon Ball Z did that a couple times.
And that was the only swear word in the whole show.
Right, right.
But because of that, it's just... And you could always pull the, no, I wasn't swearing. I was just saying the name of the place. What else am I supposed to call it?
Right, and the other thing too is it's fantastical enough that adults aren't going to watch too much into it. Really, I mean, we are now, but that's because we grew up younger.
Well, it's very interesting because I mean it's just so different from anything Disney was doing at the time, and it's so different from anything that's being done now. And some of this, I believe, is when you look at some of the main writers on this, you know. You had Michael Reeves was heavily involved in writing and running this show. And there is a crossover to the show we talked about last week with The Real Ghostbusters. He was one of the main writers involved in that show. And you had a group of people who did a show where they were like, if Ghostbusters was a trial run to see if they could get away with being a little bit dark and write a little bit of a serious cartoon and get away with selling it to kids on Saturday mornings, this one was like the, let's see if we can sneak a full-on melodrama for adults in as a cartoon and get 10-year-olds to watch it.
I would not be surprised if the success of Ghostbusters led them to say, let's give this guy a bigger shot, and this was his attempt at a magnum opus or something.
I mean, there's a full on, you just made me have flashbacks to Butchko in high school.
Why?
Mr. Butchko used to always tell me I was working on my magnum opus and asked me if I had completed it.
Well, no, let's not go back to that guy.
But, I mean, there's a ton of Shakespearean references in here.
Fantasy references.
The motivation of the Goliath character is just beyond the ability of most 10-year-olds to grasp.
Right.
I mean, you're looking at a guy who was motivated by altruism. He's like the peacemaker. He's going to work with the humans. He's going to trust them because he has to, even though his lover, Demona, doesn't want him to because she doesn't trust them. And his fellow gargoyles don't understand why they have to play nice with the humans if they're not going to play nice with them. And then Goliath's motivations at the end, everything he does after that is motivated by the fact that human beings betrayed him. The one human that he trusted betrayed him. And he couldn't going forward trust a single person, and he thought, I can only trust my own kind. And then he finds out that Demona was the real betrayer.
Yeah, right. Or at least she was in on it.
Right.
And she becomes the antithesis of what he is.
Now he doesn't know if he can trust humans. He doesn't know if he can trust gargoyles. He doesn't know who to trust. And then he's lost everything. And because like he's a man who's lost absolutely everything, and he asks that, as you said, he asked the Magus to put the spell on one more time because there's nothing for him to live for.
Right. He says, I am truly alone.
I have to be with my kind, my clan.
And the crazy thing about that, too, is there's all the eggs still in the rookery. There's all the nymphs that he literally wouldn't be alone for long, but...
Because, he didn't know that.
Well, no, he did, because he asked them...
He asked the princess to take them, but he didn't know where they were going to wind up.
Right, but he could have.
But they would have hatched.
Right,
right.
Someone would have had to take care of him. I mean, it's a weird moment by the Goliath character because
it is.
Here's the next generation of gargoyles who could use a mature adult gargoyle to teach them how to be gargoyles.
And he bails.
And he makes a very selfish choice at that point.
Oh, my God.
He feels like he's lost everything, and he's so broken that I don't want to even take care of these younglings. Forget it.
Yeah.
He's Obi-Wan if Obi-Wan had abandoned Luke.
Yeah, you know, kind of.
That's exactly what he
would have. You could argue Obi-Wan did abandon Luke. But that's another podcast.
But you know what's neat, though? Star Wars reference. The fact that...
That was neat.
They answer what happened to those eggs. So if you said, what happened to those eggs? Well, you're going to find out later.
Yeah.
They wind up on Avalon.
There's a lot of foreshadowing in this show and a lot of stuff that gets revealed. For a children's show, there's a lot of setup in the first five episodes, which, by the way, we were cost to watch the first two, and I didn't want to stop watching it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. That's my
fault. No,
that's
okay.
I made sure to watch the first five.
I linked the episodes to you thinking that the Awakening was only two episodes, and then I was watching, and I'm like, man, I was way wrong.
No, but it was the right five to watch, because, yeah. I mean, that whole first season was written as one self-contained story in the end. It's just going to continue on. Awakening was actually remastered into a movie.
It was recut and edited
into a full-length animated movie.
That's right. I remember
that.
Yeah,
you can buy that probably out there somewhere still on LaserDisc if you want the giant frisbee-sized CD.
I'm fine with that.
For kids who were born before LaserDisc.
They put it on DVD, too.
Do you remember when LaserDisc was going to be the thing of the future, though?
Yeah.
I had my grandparents and my parents walking around going, this is the future. It's a CD the size of a record.
Yeah.
And I know that was going to be the future.
I know what they are.
For God's sakes, don't drop it.
In all honesty, still an amazing format due to the fact that you can actually have one-to-one frames.
No way. You can't have one-to-one frames, man. No. Dynamite drop in, Tyler.
So.
as Scott has once again scared another child away.
So
that's what I do.
I know.
That's his expertise. But this, I got to say, the neat thing about this show, too, was aside, it had the great writers, had a star-studded cast of voice actors. Can we talk about the voice actors? Because they were really key and instrumental in making this good. When you consider Goliath was voiced by... David Keith. Yeah, David Keith.
Keith David.
I'm sorry.
Keith David. Was he in They Live?
He was definitely in They Live. I want a scene where he says, I won't put the glasses on.
Yeah, there's that.
Keith David's been in everything.
David Xanatos was voiced by...
Jonathan Frakes.
And his enemy... And the funny thing is Goliath's lover / enemy, Demona, was voiced by...
Marina Sirtis, which is Counselor Troy.
But the funny part is, in Star Trek, those two were had a relationship.
Friends, sometimes lovers.
And in the show...
Sometimes friends with benefits.
In the show, they're enemies.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of neat thing. You also had... who played Puck?
Brent Spiner, Commander Data. And I've always said this man should have been working in Hollywood far more than he was, because his range and his ability... You know him on Star Trek as the emotionless android Data. And then he comes in and plays Puck, who's basically Loki.
Yeah.
He's the trickster.
Essentially, yeah. Yeah.
And he nails it. Like, you really couldn't ask him to do a better job than what he did. Like, that... In the one scene where he's just spinning around like a top, transforming from Owen, he's like, here's Puck!
Yep.
And it's just... It's perfect. And you're like, okay, Data, your emotion chip's going haywire again. Because you hear it immediately.
But he was great. And then, I don't know, we didn't watch
Michael
the episode.
Michael Dorn
was Coldstone, Goliath's brother.
That is a talented cast. They've done a lot of voice acting. That is an incredibly talented cast of people who are on Next Generation. Avery Brooks, Commander Sisko's in there. Kate Mulgrew, Captain Janeway, plays Tatiana.
She does? That, really?
You got Meany, Chief O'Brien is in there.
It sounded like they just went over to the Star Trek studio and went, who wants to do a voice act?
I think Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis just kept saying, you need a voice actor, we got someone. You need a voice actor, we got someone. They got LeVar Burton in there from Reading Rainbow.
What was his character?
I don't remember the role he had, but he had a guest role in there. Meany, Chief O'Brien was in there.
He was Geordi also. But I mean, yeah, it's like they really just farmed out from the Star Trek cast.
Oh, yeah. They just kept, and it worked. They did a great job with it.
It's part of the disappointing thing, though, too, is this is such a great show and a fantastic thing that they did. And it shows you what the power of Disney can do when they put their money in the right place and invest in the right things.
And more importantly, when they turn it over to a writer's room and say, we're going to get out of the way.
Right.
Yes.
Do what you want to do.
But that, and that was the cool thing. That's why we call the 90s the Disney Renaissance, because Disney at that point was kind of resting. Not that other eras didn't have good things.
Right.
You know, the 80s had some good shows. I talked about Flight of the Navigator last week. But during the 90s is when you started having Aladdin, Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, all those animated movies that now they want to do live action of because Bob Iger doesn't know how to create anything. They made those original cartoons. You had the Disney Afternoon that was, even if it was kiddie, it was all new. It was an original. It was right. innovative. And then, of course, you had Gargoyles. And this is when, like you said, Scott, Disney clearly was saying, all right, guys, create.
Yeah.
Make something. And do something. Thrill us.
And what we got here, I mean, we've talked a little bit, Eddie, hinted at some of this stuff. And I mean, in addition to how advanced this storytelling is, this was a serial before serials were a thing. In the mid-90s, you still didn't have the Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, Game of Thrones serial. Star Trek Deep Space Nine was one of the shows that was approaching being a serial. And it grew into it in its last season in 1999.
Right. Other than anime, nothing else followed this format.
Cartoons at this point were episodic. And it had to be, because if you missed an episode, we're talking about 10-year-old kids.
Even Darkwing Duck and Tailspin were that way.
Even adult TV shows were episodic because they wanted you to be able to miss an episode and catch the next episode. Mm-hmm. There was a huge gamble on TV when they started making all TV series miniseries, and if you missed one episode, you were lost.
Right.
Especially before the days of VCR, DVR, and Netflix. If you missed it, you missed it. You had to wait until it came out in reruns over the summer to catch that episode.
Or call up your friend and be like, what happened?
Right.
That's why they didn't
even have the internet to go catch a synopsis. If you were watching Gargoyles and you missed episode 3 of Awakening, it wasn't coming back on until summer reruns.
And that's why they had to have the previously on.
Previously, yep.
They had to have that because you know what? It wasn't just Disney doing that. You also had like X-Men and Spider-Man Saturday morning cartoons were doing that.
Not as serialized as this show was.
I don't know, because they had to previously on X-Men, and you'd have the same idea.
That wasn't always. That was on an episode-to-episode basis. That was like if you had a three-parter episode, they'd go previously on X-Men. But it wouldn't be every single episode would have a previously.
In season two, they did like a 24-episode arc of the Gargoyles World Tour where they toured the world finding more gargoyles.
Yeah. Or fighting other evil.
You had an arc in a cartoon.
Yeah, and it was funny because it finished the arc of Avalon where they went to Avalon, found the other eggs, fought Oberon and saved the day or whatever. Oh, fought the Archmage, and then they got on a boat to go back, and the knight who was living there, the young little boy that saw the gargoyles as a kid and then grew up to be a knight, he said, Avalon doesn't send you where you want to go. It takes you where you need to be. And it was, like you said, Scott, an arc of them just going to Japan or Latin America or China or England. England, in fact, was in a different time. It was during the Blitz. Or they went to a possible future in Manhattan because Puck was trying to get that magic item, the Phoenix Gate.
That was
time
a really
travel.
Good episode we're going to talk about later.
And just they had to do this until Avalon finally said, okay, you've gone around the world righting wrongs. Time to go back to New York because there's one more thing you got to do.
And I mean, all the character motivations, like Xanatos fighting for his son. And I get back to this. Like a lot of this is high level in some ways. I heard one reviewer describe it as one of the many mediocrities that nerd culture goes crazy over. And to me, that was just one of those reviewers being above saying a cartoon is good.
I guess so, because I mean this is the kind of show where even if you miss an episode, you can catch up easy enough.
Yeah.
But somehow Lost, which is the greatest thing in the world. You miss 5 minutes of Lost, you're going...
If you blink, you're lost in Lost.
In fact, if you watch the episode, you're lost.
There's no cheap storytelling in this. There just isn't.
Well, I was going to say that if that reviewer said that, I'd like to see something he liked, and I was going to use Lost as a focal point, because Lost is...
The worst.
It is really bad writing.
To me, this really isn't a mediocrity. Maybe it's mediocre animation. It's nothing great.
Yeah, they're right.
Animation-wise.
I mean, but
super
what
great.
Was at the time?
But
it's, the, it doesn't. It's
it
not,
was
it's
fine
like
for
it's
its
unwatchable
time.
Now either.
It's fine for its time.
I might be able to make an argument that this is the best voice acted cartoon you're ever going to see.
Possibly.
be pretty hard to come up with a better voice acted cartoon.
I mean,
dialogue was well written.
There's animes that I like better than this, because, but they're also geared towards adults, so...
Yeah, you can't compare... When you go to anime, you can't always compare one-to-one, because anime is such a range of age and topics.
It's almost a different genre entirely.
Is, yeah,
it
is.
It's not cartoons.
That's why it's called anime.
Right. I mean, and... But I guess the question where I take this to is, are we asking too much of this? Is this trying to be too much for an after-school kids cartoon? And I'm trying to think back, because I was 14 when this show came out. But the thing is, I had mostly moved on from cartoons at this point. I was a massive Star Trek geek, and I was watching TV shows at this point, and I had moved on from cartoons. I wasn't coming home after school at 15 and firing open the TV to watch cartoons.
I was
going to work within an hour of coming home from school at 5 o'clock at 15. And so cartoons had gone away. I knew Gargoyles was out there, but it was never... I think it's one of those cartoons that had it came out 5 years earlier, I would have been really into it, because I would have came home from school and watched cartoons. But I'm sitting here trying to think back of, would 10-year-old me have really liked this? And I think 10-year-old me would have, but I'm abnormal, because I was like devouring Star Trek The Next Generation books at 11, and I used to check the encyclopedia out of the school library to take it home to read at night.
Here's what I'll tell you, Scott. Well, again, going back to what we said about this was also marketed for a higher age demographic, probably.
But it wasn't, because of the time slot. That's the thing.
Right,
you can't be marketing for an 18 to 20-year-old. It might have been 14 to 18, but...
I guess I would say, if you looked at the competition on other shows, you had one of the other shows that was competing was Exo Squad. And Exo Squad was also kind of a heady cartoon. I mean, it was humans versus Neo Sapiens. So, and for control of which evolutionary step is going to survive in a war. So, was it as heady? I don't know, but it was heady to be sure. So I would wager that this was aimed at a higher demographic. Now, for the 8-year-old, 10-year-old, did they get everything? Oh, no. No. But that's where the action comes in. That's where you'd still have... I mean, they still marketed the toys. I saw kids walk around with the toys. So was it beyond the 8 to 10-year-old? Probably. But then again, I think they were trying to reach for a higher age, considering on other channels, two channels away, you had something more heady and more interesting for someone like me. This kept me in, because also too with Disney Afternoon, after sixth grade I wasn't into Darkwing Duck anymore, so I didn't I watched Tailspin because for some reason that was neat, but after Tailspin, until we got to Gargoyles, I'm done. I don't need the rest of
you know, I can't find anything about how this did ratings wise, but I'll say it got 3 seasons.
It has 5, though, total.
It was a 13-episode first season, a, like, 43-episode second season, and then the Goliath Chronicles in the third season that was moved back to Saturday mornings. And we've commented on the fact that we didn't see much like this before, and we didn't see much like this after.
Right.
It's pretty unique. And you didn't try something this... To me...
Same as Ghostbusters. You didn't get to see it before, you didn't see it after.
Sorry, Scott. I feel like Ghostbusters, that's good dropping, because I feel like Ghostbusters is the middle ground between just the pointless, zany true kids cartoons, right, of mindless, let's tell a story that's not connected, and it's cheap cartoons for kids. Ghostbusters was this middle ground between Gargoyles and something like Darkwing Duck. And
right, but you're not going to get a show like that again.
I was going to say, one of the things that I think is, looking at Ghostbusters, it was one of those things to where it could go more towards kids due to the fact that every single episode, you practically had a resolution, whereas Gargoyles, you could have a 5-episode series to where it was back to back to back, and all of a sudden, you miss one of those episodes, you completely mess out, whereas, you know, this, you had to get every single piece of every single episode. If you did not get that, then, well, you're going to be lost in the dust a little bit.
You're going to have to listen to the beginning.
That's right, Tyler. Well, and we had, you know, with Ghostbusters, you had Slimer. You had Ray, who was childlike, to dumb it down for the kids. But you made it a kid's show with those elements. The adult elements were Egon's technobabble. and Peter Venkman's humor, and then the love interest that was built beneath the scenes between Egon and Janine, and Peter horndogging.
I see your point, but
boy, that sounds like they invented a whole new phrase.
I'm going to give you a different perspective here, because I was about 4 or 5 when I started watching Gargoyles, and I watched Gargoyles for 2 reasons. One, my big brothers loved it, and 2, I got to see giant monsters fight bad guys and destroy robots and do all kinds of awesome stuff. And I can guarantee you, I was not watching it, you know, episode after episode for the story or anything like that. I was 4 or 5.
No way.
I was just watching gargoyles beat the crap out of each other. Now, as an adult, I can go back and watch this show and actually appreciate the things that I didn't see as a kid and realize how good of a show it really was. So I think the show did something that a lot of shows don't even try to do, which is cater to both the adults and the kids.
I agree. I would agree with that.
And there's very few shows out there that do that. And being a father of 4, I can attest that not very many shows out there are even watchable for adults, let alone have anything there for adults. Try watching an episode or 5 of Sophia the First. No thank you.
I've had to do that when babysitting my niece.
That's all my daughter watches.
I was going to say, Corey, you mentioned this beforehand, that something like this just doesn't get made anymore because...
However, there is one exception to that.
Well, there's always an exception.
That exception right now is Trollhunters, a Netflix original show. The reason Trollhunters is good, though, Guillermo del Toro wrote it. So
there's your answer.
It's not a kid's story.
There's your answer.
But you know what? It is very much a kid's show. It's like DreamWorks made it. So it's got DreamWorks animation mixed with Guillermo del Toro's dark, horrifying storytelling. And on top of that, Ron Perlman's in the first 2 seasons.
Oh, man.
So that makes it pretty good, too.
I guess, first season. So I don't want to sound like I'm negative on Gargoyles, because I'm not. It's a fantastic TV cartoon, and as you know, artistically, it's as good a writing as you're going to find in a cartoon. And beyond that, I'd actually say one of the last notes I had to talk about here is that I think this thing could work rebooted and take especially Awakening and make it a live action with CGI. I think you could CGI live action this, and the storytelling is strong enough to carry it as a movie.
So
you'd have to tweak some. I don't think you'd have to make very many tweaks to any of it, and I think you could make this a live action movie with CGI gargoyles.
If anyone could do it, it would be Disney. They've got the money.
The technology definitely exists to do it.
They've done some things that I never thought they'd be able to do live action. Like, I never thought Jungle Book live action would be a good movie, and it was good. Never thought Beauty and the Beast would be, and it's not that great, but that's because it's not for me. But it's still pretty good.
It looks good.
And Rogue Rowan?
Well. I don't know. They're also
We've all watched Awakening this week.
Right.
Yes. None of those concepts and the writing in that is limited to cartoon. If you put live action actors in there and CGI the gargoyles in, does it not work as a movie?
Here's what the problem would be. What rating would that movie be? Because you can't make a gargoyles movie that's rated that really would be rated PG.
No,
based on the subject matter.
You'd finally sit there and say we did this as a cartoon because it was the only way we could do it in the 1990s. Right. We couldn't do it live action in the 90s. So we made it as a cartoon, and you'd punch it up to be a little bit like Underworld, and you'd either make it PG-13 or R.
And that's the thing. I mean, the first...
And it would kill as an R movie. I think it would be a great R movie.
It would be great.
It'd be an even better, R movie.
It would be convincing the people at Disney, the family company, we're all about the kids company, we don't want to show too much violence company.
Could you do it through Pixar? Do they get a little more lenient with Pixar doing it?
I don't think so. I mean, there's not much violence.
Someone's got to be able to CGI skills are there. Someone other than Disney's got to be able to do this.
You got to go back to this. Would they be willing to make something that violent? Like what? What is this bad?
With the exact Disney logo on it, you mean?
You'd have to buy the rights off Disney and then have another film company do it. But it can be done. And I guess we're getting bogged down on the realities of it. I guess where I'm trying to go with this is...
Oh, could it be made well? Yes.
The story almost needs no changing to be
true,
to be a movie and to work as the plot line of a PG-13 movie.
I agree, yeah.
It needs almost no changing. And that's where I guess I'm saying, did they ask, and are we calling 3 seasons and 78 episodes a successful cartoon? Because we just did the Ghostbusters, which I think had like 138.
Scott,
are we calling 3 seasons successful?
Scott, was Firefly a good show successful?
Artistically. From a monetary perspective, from an investment perspective, from a business perspective, Firefly was a massive bomb.
I guess that's all you're worried about.
No, I'm asking the question two ways.
I would ask...
Are you calling it artistically, is Gargoyles a success?
How many episodes did it make?
And unquestionably.
78. I would say it was a success.
You had a truncated first season, a full second season, and a truncated third season.
I would say
that
yes.
That doesn't scream success to me, because most shows that are successful have more than one full season before. So if you had 13 episodes in the first season and 48 in the second season... That means your third season was a like a 14, 15 episode run. You had two half seasons and a full season before they pulled the rug out from under you. I would say financially it had to have missed.
It's a cartoon, so
they wouldn't have shut it off after 3 years if it was making money.
I mean, here's the thing: you're talking about success for cartoons. A lot of cartoons are like that, where they have one or two seasons and then they're just over.
How long has Sophia the First been on? Your daughter's niece was watching it 5 years ago.
Three or four seasons right now.
Fine, Scott, it was a failure.
Well, I was going to say, there's
two ways to define failure. And I'm saying, as a monetary property,
then it's
and
it failed.
Is the reason that it failed because the audience, Arch, I think you brought this up, and I kind of opened this up to you because you and I kind of feel the same way here. They went for a tough audience with a cartoon.
Absolutely.
You needed an audience to carry this. You needed to have like 13 to 18 year olds buying in, because Corey, I don't think you were the average 5-year-old.
No,
I don't think most 5-year-olds were buying in and getting excited to go watch Gargoyles. I don't think there was enough there for them. Even when they fight, they just kind of fly and tackle people.
Well, and
I was going to say, one of the things that I think was best for them is when they actually moved it to Saturdays, because it could have carried a lot longer then, because you have to look at it this way. That audience that I thought was perfect for it, probably your 12-year-olds all the way up to 16, because then beyond then you start getting into people having to go to work. You don't have your DVR. You don't have your internet access. You don't have anything on demand. You have to hope your VCR works properly or your parents don't change the channel and you don't lose what you're trying to watch. I think with everything that's going on, they should have put it on a Saturday morning, put it on something to where everybody would have the ability to be able to watch it, that they would be able to, and it would have carried it a lot longer to get that bigger, more niche audience in.
I think it's something that would work. I think if you rebooted Gargoyles and put it on Netflix,
yeah,
fantastic.
I think you'd have a pretty successful show with a major adult buy-in that would carry it.
I'm amazed that the show isn't on any streaming service. It's not. I looked.
Well, probably because Disney wants an arm and a leg. The comic that rebooted from 2006 to 2008 shut down because Disney charged them too much for the licensing fee. They couldn't afford it.
Well, but they could restart it now under the Marvel banner since Disney owns it anyway.
The only thing that it does have for streaming is they do have an agreement with YouTube to where you can go ahead and purchase and watch everything through there.
That's
true. But
then
again, a per episode purchase?
Right, I mean, I can do that on Amazon as well.
Forget
that. Yeah.
Forget that.
But, you know, I think, look, the show was different, and that may have been what killed it. It may have been too early for its time, and that's probably where we're at, you know. Today,
it wouldn't fly today, do you think?
With kids today, not a chance.
No. I completely disagree with you. Absolutely, the show would do fine for kids today, and here's why. Because my kids are, my oldest son, my 6-year-old, is past the shows.
Which is what 90% of them are now?
And yeah, and is looking for that good story. He likes Star Wars because it's got a good story, and he likes the characters, and he likes watching that.
Time travel stuff.
He likes Trollhunters. He likes How to Train Your Dragon. He likes the things that have more depth and substance over the I'm SpongeBob.
Yeah, he's gonna get that point. My nephew,
and it may be just because he's
a very cerebral kid. Very, you know, and he talks like an adult at 7 years old. Okay, I'm not sure that Gargoyles would be his thing. And that's where I guess we each have our own. You think it would work because your son would like it, and my exposure is my nephew, who's the same age as your son, and I'm not sure. Do you think?
Let's ask the guy with the kid.
In all honesty, I think it would work today, and the reason that I think it would work today is because the delivery for cartoons and any other media is completely different.
Yeah.
If you look at how Disney does things, especially for their kids' channels and everything else, you have the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. What do? They go ahead and they rerun every single one of the shows that they've rerun forever, and then all of a sudden, hey, guess what? Once a week, or you know, once every other week, or once a month, we're going to have at this time a brand new episode of the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, and then they're going to go ahead and rerun all the rest of them continuously.
What they really focus on is all the kids who have the tablets, going ahead and connecting to the streaming services, connecting in through your cable network. And hey, instead of going ahead and watching this show when it comes up live, let's go ahead and watch it on demand whenever you feel like it.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and that's elementary school. and that's where we're at in this day and age. That's why Gargoyles probably would work better, because not only is it a serial story, it's a serial story that it's only 22 minutes an episode. You're not going to remember that from week to week. That's the other reason those previouslys are there. And in a streaming service, like I said, that's why I'm surprised it's
I think it would work well today, but I think it would work well because you'd get a massive buy-in from dads watching it.
Right, and that's the thing, too. That's the thing, sure. too. Look, I look for shows with my kids, and that's part of the reason my kids want to watch shows with me. If I like the show, I'll watch it with them. I'm not going to watch Adventures of Gumball or SpongeBob SquarePants with my kids. I'll watch Trollhunters because it's actually something good that I like to watch. Plus, I want them to watch more intelligent things than just garbage.
Yep.
You know.
All right. I think we've talked this one through entirely as much as we're going to. I don't think we're going to uncover any new ground at this point. I think we think it's an awesome show. Maybe it was a little early for its time because of just having to hit that niche audience of kids that were in school at the wrong time and they weren't there for it. But it would have worked very well today. And regardless, artistically, it's a phenomenally successful show.
When you think about it as one thing going for it, the demographic it was targeted is still watching it. Vincent right. Price once said, "I target the younger people. That way I have fans for life." And so it has that advantage, which is why you guys, I agree with you that you could stream this and make a good show out of it.
And I'll also stand by that this could work as a great CGI live action.
I don't think you'd
have to make any changes to the mini arcs that they put in. The storytelling is written on a high enough level that this could easily just be made into a movie almost verbatim for adults.
Right. It could. I don't see it actually doing so. I don't see anyone actually putting the money into doing it. If anybody could, it would be Disney, but I don't see them taking the risk with this show.
We're going to move on to talking about three episodes that our resident Gargoyle superfan, the Rage Master, picked out as best representative of the show, pretty much. But they're not three episodes, really. They're five episodes, two episodes, and then one episode.
Yeah, sorry, I got
so we've talked a lot about Awakening. But the
commercial
premise,
light's gone off, Scott. Our sponsors are bugging us now.
So we're going to take a quick break here, get you a message from one of our sponsors for the show. Disclaimer, sponsor does not really exist.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Garks! Beware the skies!
Garks!
Beware the seas!
Garks!
Beware evildoers!
Garks!
Deep in the lab of the evil scientist Pruinchin, the fearsome flying strength of gargoyles is mixed with the raw sea power of sharks to create Garks. With the power of these creatures at my beck and call, the world will be mine.
Not so fast, evil dude. You may have made us, but we fight for justice.
What? No! Now you can get out of the action and join our heroes, White Jaw, to battle! Hammer Time.
Let's smash these guys!
Sawtooth.
To cut out crap.
And Tiger.
Waza waza, bruh.
Join them in their epic battle against Pruinchin and his sinister science aggressors to support justice and honor.
Teeth of sharks! Garks! Gargoyle wings! Garks! Flying through the air! Garks! Power the sea! Garks! Even doers flee! Garks!
Garks! Collect them all.
Back to the show.
All right, so now, go buy that product. Or not, go buy those toys and go watch Garks.
I will say
that looks neat. I mean, anybody that would tell me that's just some kind of Ninja Turtle knockoff, I don't know what they're talking about.
If enough people start asking for these things, we do have to make them.
Yeah.
I think we need to make
them. I hope they make them. I'd love to have me some Garks.
Hey, look.
Idea, something, profit.
Yeah.
Dynamite drop in, Tyler.
Garks are a trademark of Raven Lunatic Media.
Garks.
Yep. Verbal trademark stands. I own
all you,
this
all
property.
You have to do in order to own it is say TM after it, right?
Not the Rage Master who Inc. created it. I own it. It's a Raving Lunatic Media property, and that's mine.
Yeah, have fun creating
that
for
I haven't
it.
Trademarked yet, so no one will steal that out from under me.
Yeah, have fun creating that there. Good job.
Hey, that's what businessmen do. We find creators, convince them to let us use their idea, and make sure we make all of the money off of it instead of them.
Yeah, that's why no one likes
America.
You.
Business. Okay, let's talk about Awakening. 5-episode arc.
Indeed, I've had enough of your prattling.
Oh, no.
We'll talk about it. It is I, Lord Ragemaster, returned back into this worthless form.
Open the portal. Open the portal. Open the portal!
The portal is locked.
No!
I am here.
All right, you know what? Since you're here,
yes.
I have a bone to pick with you.
Indeed.
How is it? I know we want to talk about the episodes, but real quick, while we have Lord Ragemaster here, I want to address this.
Be quick or I will slay thee.
How is this science fiction? How are we considering this show that starts in the Middle Ages as science fiction?
What is this science fiction?
Did you ruin your iPad?
I attempted to override the portal, and the portal disabled my iPad.
What is science fiction?
You know what science fiction is, Lord Ragemaster.
I do not.
All right, fine. What would you consider this show to be in genre? What genre would you consider this show?
I would consider it to be very much like my own world, but different.
Exactly.
Fictitious.
Different history.
Fictitious.
I do not understand this fictitious. Do you mean difficult and dangerous?
Lord Ragemaster, are you a politician in your realm?
I think
because
I'm sorry.
You answered a question without saying anything.
Exactly.
That was the best evasive answer I have ever heard.
I do not know what a politician is.
So because not Lord Ragemaster.
Are you going to let me do this or am I going to have to slay you?
I mean, feel free to attempt to slay me.
I shall slay you.
All right.
We are talking about the beginning of this tale, Yawn Gargoyles, and their certain awakening. We begin in a land of the Scots in the year 959, the year of your Lord. Or perhaps it's 54. 90-something.
994.
Thank you. And in that time,
I know more about your
Castle Wyvern is guarded during the day by human masters, but in the evening by gargoyles that turn to stone with sunlight and dominate the air in the evening. Enough out of you. They
dominated air!
They fly. They defend the castle. However, they are betrayed and frozen in a magic spell, in stone, for 1,000 years. For the spell cannot be broken, lest the castle goes above the clouds. Indeed, the Magus could not reverse the spell, for the counterspell page had been burnt by fearsome, vile Vikings.
Because of plot.
Yes. And then, one David Xanatos brings them back to New York, and puts the castle on top of his castle above the clouds and brings them back for his nefarious purposes. Indeed.
Yep.
And trouble ensues.
Do you have gargoyles where you come from, Lord Ragemaster?
We do.
Yeah? Do you slay them?
Now, is it real gargoyles only or like Bronx?
I'm sorry. you mean the canine gargoyle. No, we do not have that. Okay. We do not have that. That would be... My dimension is different.
So are you friends with your gargoyles?
I personally am not friends with any gargoyles.
Is
no.
The portal working yet? Can we get rid of him yet?
I do not think so. Perhaps if you were a Magus or Archmage...
One, executing... Oh, okay. Activated.
All right.
Whoa, jeez, what happened?
Yeah,
I think we've
you
got
lost.
Wisdom for good.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he almost overloaded my control panel.
Jeez.
I was trying to distract him.
Well, thanks
for
the help. I mean,
he just ruined it.
It just after we went to commercial, I just kind of vegged out for a minute. A
little bit. Like Lord Ragemaster got in control. But that's okay.
Okay, I'm gonna have to be on edge here and stay frosty if I'm gonna keep him off. Out of me.
So we've talked a lot about Awakening, and I think
it's
keys,
fantastic. It's
the
really
keys
good.
To take part of this 5-episode thing is, one, it spends an entire 22-minute episode to give you the backstory on where the gargoyles came from, their time, why they're here. Oh, and you know what? Instead of just saying gargoyles are in Manhattan because, they give you a real reason.
Yeah.
Gargoyles, how they get to Manhattan. And it shows you how they were betrayed, and it sets up the whole Goliath character arc. Because let's be honest, it's not really about Brooklyn and Hudson. And
they don't even have names in the first
right.
Brooklyn.
And
Brooklyn. I'm
I said
sorry.
Brooklyn.
It sounded like
yeah,
you said
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
It's not about Brooklyn and Hudson.
It's about Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But I'm from Berkeley.
I'm from Perma.
Perma.
Perma Berkeley.
I got my socks and sandals on and my flamingos. But it sets up the motivation of the Goliath character perfectly. It actually gives you what you need to know about Damona. And then you find out, you know, as you said, they're sent to the future with the sleep spell. Xanatos figures out, you know, through some research, that he can bring the castle, set it up on top of the building, and then the gargoyles will come back to life, and he'll be able to use them to study them to create his own weapons, because that's right. what he wants to do, because he's evil.
And he knows it works, because he brought Damona back that way.
Yep.
He just brought her, put her up onto the roof.
Yep.
It broke out, and he said, well, okay then we can actually do this. Now, of course, it begs the question, Damona, how did she get frozen in stone forever? But they address that later on.
And you do a wonderful job of this in a cartoon, and it's not overdone exposition either.
Right.
It really isn't. It's one episode in a backstory. It's what you need to know, and then it's all the current story setting the time. But throughout all of this, you know, we've talked about the smartness of this writing. It's Goliath coming to terms of learning how to trust again. And you've got, is it Alyssa?
Alyssa Mazza.
Alyssa looks at him and says,
Alicia.
I know you don't want to trust someone. I know you've been betrayed by the one human that you trusted. But you've got to trust someone in this world, and you'll do better off trusting me than Xanatos. And it's just this message, and that's like so above kid show writing. That's adult writing right there, where you say you got to trust someone. And it's Goliath learning how to believe in something and someone again.
Scott, are we getting close to a meaning right now?
I mean,
are you saving that for later?
No,
because there is surface. Meaning in this. There is meaning
here. And that's the. I mean, I'm just pointing out the levels of the writing here, and an example in Awakening of what's. I mean, this show is not carried by the action.
No,
the
not
fight
really,
scenes
no.
are pretty standard.
Yeah,
I mean,
they
it's,
are.
The gargoyles don't have any crazy superpowers. They glide. They're strong.
They hit things.
A bullet will kill them.
And when they run, it looks cool.
A poison dart will knock them out. They just got,
Somehow they survive a grenade exploding behind all of them.
Everybody, and Alyssa Mazza, everyone survives explosions in this show, but, you know, that's where the cartoon
part. That's got to happen.
Yeah, that's where the cartoon part
but
comes
in. And you get, Xanatos is a great villain. It really is a well-written villain. He is evil to be evil.
He's Lex Luthor of that
well,
world.
There's also points in time where he's not so much evil.
That's true.
You know, he sometimes has more of a he walks more of the moral gray line instead of being evil.
Yeah sometimes he's a good guy.
That's very Lex Luthor.
Well, and we're
going
to get to that in The Gathering, and I'll bring that up. But I mean, with Awakening, I think the key to this 5-part episode is that we've established a backstory, we've established the motivation for how Goliath is going to act, and the actual arc of a character in a cartoon.
Yeah,
which but just blows me away.
One other thing,
Damona. You establish who Damona and why Damona is going to act the way she is, because she's angry at Goliath, because she sees that she's lost members of her kind, her clan, her family, because Goliath wanted to trust the stupid humans and the outsiders. It's, you know, Damona represents tribalism.
Well,
a lot of people say America's breaking down into tribalism, and only me and my tribe matter. And if you're not with me, you're against me. And that's Damona.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to mention too that, you know, the character and the what was he, the chief or whatever, the guy who betrayed Goliath, he was, it's weird to me too, because he didn't just betray Goliath because he was a bad guy and he was evil all along. He actually didn't betray Goliath. He betrayed the princess,
right,
the queen. He wanted, because of how they were treating the gargoyles, he wanted the gargoyles to be treated better.
Yeah.
He wanted them to have a better life that they were not receiving, and that was his motivation. And it's strange that instead of just making him a bad guy for the sake of being a bad guy, they made him a good guy who's trying to do a good thing by doing something bad.
Because that was the gargoyles' home before they built the castle, and the gargoyles just said, well, this is our plot of land, we'll defend it still. And then they got dumped on. And that guy, I forget his name, but the captain, what's neat, though, is he dies in the first episode or two.
Yep.
Like, he does this thing, realizes he's bad. Well, he did a bad thing. But then he falls off the cliff. And that moment, too, let me say, something you see with Goliath in this, you feel really bad for Goliath in all of this, because he just keeps losing. He's the proverbial Job.
Well, he says right after they both fall off the cliff,
I've lost everything,
even
my own revenge.
I mean,
that he keeps losing.
And it comes back to that at the end. Like, Goliath comes to terms with the need for revenge because he's motivated by revenge at this point. And he tells Xanatos, you want me to destroy humanity? I'll start with you.
Yeah.
And they say, don't do it. And give me one good reason why not to, because you become him.
Right.
And it's that point he realizes, I've got to let this revenge quest go. It's a healing for Goliath. And then, I mean, look at the other things it brings up. The princess. That's addressing racism head on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I mean, absolutely. She just called him a spawn of Satan. Not that, but the devils and...
Yep. And then she will come to, you know, realize the error of her ways. And she wants to atone for it. And she's going to do what she can. But, I mean, it just shows you the ugly side of racism head on. No matter what Goliath did, you know, it wasn't going to matter to her.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the Magus, he does a terrible thing out of grief. You're
right.
Showing basically, you know, the stages of grief and lashing out, and it's a whole vengeance motif.
Right.
And not letting it consume you. And this is in the first five episodes. The first episode.
First episode, yeah.
And I mean, and the rest of it that I talked about, you know, that's in the next three or four.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with, I mean, this is the focus of this story.
Well, it's cool, too, because it shows you that revenge doesn't just hurt you. Or the person you're trying to hurt. It hurts innocent people alongside everybody else.
Right, because the gargoyles had no idea what was going on.
Right.
They received this curse, and it was like, you killed the princess. The what? What are you talking about?
We came here to save you and the princess. Yeah. And this Magus idiot just immediately lashes out because he assumes that the princess is dead.
Yeah, it's their fault because they didn't do their job or something. And it's like, what are you talking about?
Let's talk about the gathering real quick.
Okay.
Because
the gathering was my favorite episodes. Can I jump
go
in
ahead.
Real quick? This is just as a recap, if you're ever gonna watch this, this is after a long trip. Gargoyles had always entertained Shakespearean and folklorish elements in the show. You know, you had Macbeth. Honestly, this is the show that made me read Macbeth. I'm not gonna lie. But you had the Weird Sisters from Macbeth in there, the three witches. And through the course of the show, they wind up going to Avalon. Goliath, Elisa, and what's the dog's name? Bronx? I always get him confused. And they wind up on a boat because the one little boy, I think his name was Cody, he comes back. He goes to Avalon with the princess after the castle's sacked, along with the Magus and the Rookery eggs, and they wind up at Avalon. And King Arthur's there too, because you find out in the story that Merlin did a favor for Oberon, who is the elf lord that runs Avalon. And because of the favor, Oberon said, okay, Arthur can stay here and sleep here. And when he's needed, he could go back to England. And so Merlin never shows back up, but King Arthur makes an appearance on several episodes. But long story short, after they deal with whatever's on Avalon, Goliath, his daughter, who was on Avalon the whole time, what was her name? Oh, Adria, or starts with an A. And they get on a boat, and they're just kind of, Avalon is sending them around the world. And they're encountering all these mystical creatures, these changelings, these other gargoyles. And finally, it gets to the point where Oberon has what's called the Gathering, where all the mystical creatures, Odin, the Banshee, the Changelings, are called to be in Avalon forever. And the problem is that Puck is missing. No one knows where Puck is. And so Oberon goes to look for him, and that leads into a huge thing of not just trying to get Puck back, but Xanatos' kid. Because Xanatos' new baby also has changeling blood in it and his magic possibility. And Oberon's wife, Tatiana, is, by virtue of what she is, she's Xanatos' wife's mother. So Xanatos' mother-in-law, Fox's mother.
Yeah.
So she's very invested, and she wants the baby, which goes along with folklore, because in folklore, changelings, the fairy folk, kidnap human babies.
Right.
That's what they like. They take them, and they take them back to their own realm. And so she wants to do what they do, take a human baby. But this human baby has fairy blood in it, magic blood. So they want to take it back, and that's where this whole mess starts. That Oberon comes, and He wants all the magic creatures back on Avalon, and that means we're going to take the baby, because the baby's got some magic blood. We need to take it. And that leads to a huge fight between Oberon's power and magic and Xanatos's technology. And this is where kind of like sci-fi versus magic comes in, because Xanatos is using science and sorcery is being used by Oberon.
Great statement by Owen. Energy is energy.
Energy, whether produced right. by science or sorcery. And they learn that as Oberon fights, he's losing power because he's expending energy to do these magic effects. Just like Xanatos is losing energy in his generators because he's using force fields. So this is really one of my faves. Absolutely.
I think it's an excellent episode all around. But what I think is amazing with this episode and what just leapt off the page at me is you took the bold step of humanizing the villain. Xanatos is the bad guy.
Not here, he's not.
No, but for the majority, if you ask me who the villain of the show is, it's Xanatos.
Right.
And they make you feel bad for him. They mm-hmm. make him a human being. You want him to win. His baby's going to get stolen. His wife, who by connection would be the bad woman in the right. show, you're not supposed to like her because she's married willfully to the evil Xanatos. And you root for her. They yeah. become the good people. And you show that a villain, you show kids that a bad guy is not just a cardboard cutout bad guy. And Xanatos is a mustache-twirling villain.
Right.
Except for this episode.
Yeah.
And well, all there's
a few others, but definitely this one.
They take even a further step of putting the main characters in the background
yes.
of this story.
This isn't about the gargoyles.
The gargoyles are almost inconsequential, aside from the fact that they help Xanatos.
They're a distraction.
Yeah.
They're a distraction.
That's exactly. The whole time, that's all they are, is a distraction.
And then you've got, you know, they're going to help their enemy because mm-hmm. it's wrong.
Right.
And he says, Xanatos may be my enemy, but this action is wrong. There's not the enemy of my enemy is my friend thing.
Right.
And I think this is just marvelous storytelling, especially when you're talking about something that was made for kids.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is on a level of stuff that kids aren't going to, I don't think kids are going to grasp what was really going on here.
Right.
And this is just another example of, I mean, this is a great pick, Rage Master, of something to demonstrate just how high level the writing here was. This works, this could be a Walking Dead episode.
No.
It's got that type of study the human condition and what makes us tick to it.
Yeah.
And you've got the hero, and he's going to show you he's the true hero because he's going to do the right thing because it's the right thing.
Right.
It's not because he likes Xanatos. And even at the end, you know, Xanatos thanks him. And yeah. what does Goliath say? And I should trust you after all that's gone between us. But I have recently found out that the bond between a father and a daughter,
right,
a father and a child, can change many things.
Because he now has his daughter with him.
Right. And this is just another example of the writers just hitting on so many levels. And I don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it. I feel like it's almost wasted writing on a cartoon. You could have applied this. You want this on so many adult-themed dramas, adult-oriented, like, targeted dramas, and you don't get it.
You want it, but the majority of people don't.
Maybe.
It's part of the reason why these types of things aren't in the mainstream.
But yet I'd argue The Walking Dead does this a lot.
The Walking Dead, look, The Walking
Dead
is a phenomenon
Walking Dead. Yeah.
That started because of blood and guts and gore. The Walking Dead is not something that's kept its pace and steam because of its good storytelling, because it doesn't do that.
I'll disagree with you. The Walking Dead has always been, and I'm going to turn this into a Walking Dead podcast, but I'll just say we're going to disagree on this, because The Walking Dead has never been about the zombies. The Walking Dead has never been about the
violence. No, I agree.
The Walking Dead has always, to me, what's fascinated everyone about it has been what humans become when you take away the controlling
but it
influence
doesn't, it
of society
it takes,
and what happens to our morality.
It takes forever to get there, and most yes. people are watching because of the massive amounts of blood and guts and gore.
Which
it's not getting the number of viewers, it's getting because of those deep storytelling moments. It's getting those because of, oh, hey, there's a lot of... Look, I'll tell you this much. Go listen to what anybody says about the show in mainstream media, like Dieter or somebody like that from Rover's yep. Morning Glory or whatever. And the first thing they're going to say is, there's so much blood on this for cable television.
Yeah, it's that's mixed, the draw. But if this was just mindless blood and killing, Walking Dead wouldn't have been there. But in any rate, anyway, this is Gargoyles just doing something that is just very high level that very few shows on TV do successfully. On a cartoon that lasted 2.5 years.
Well, and you know, a good reason for that is also the runtime. What I've discovered, I was watching this last night, and then I tuned into, I want to say it was Arrow, I think, and I fell asleep. Because what's happening with shows now that have a 45-minute to an hour runtime is filler. Filler, 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 filler. Filler feelings, filler talk, filler emotion, just people standing around and blah, 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 blah,
A 22-minute runtime
you gotta get to the point.
Forces you to go Hemingway on it and you take out everything that's not needed until you're left with the essentials of what you're trying
and
to do.
And that's talk. What like, I'm starting to wonder, should they do that? Because and that's for my take. Yeah, I know a lot of people like the filler. No,
from an artistic standpoint, Rage Master, you're correct. You should maybe you'd do a lot better with shrinking shows back down to 22-minute runtimes.
But that made
from
this
a monetary
show work.
Making standpoint, you can sell more commercials in an hour-long show, well, and that's why it's going
to
stay.
But you know, what? Even
leave it to Scott.
Leave it to Scott
to put the damper on the creativity. Moment.
Even a show that doesn't have that motivation for the bad times, like Altered Carbon. They do a very good job of doing an hour-long show without filler.
Yeah, that's true. I think the last episode was the only one that had filler for me. Otherwise, the rest of the time, it's like, they're occupying their time well.
Yeah. All right, let's move on real quick to the Dream episode. We got about 3 minutes to hit this. This, to me, is not so much the deep meaning episode of what's going on. It's just a really cool episode that has a lot more science aspects to it. You see Lexington as a cyborg, gargoyle.
Dystopian future.
It's a dystopian future. Damona's back working against Xanatos. His consciousness has been downloaded, but Lexington is really controlling it to take over the world. This is one of those where not everything can be deep storytelling and meaning. This is just really cool.
Right. Yeah.
Well, if anything, I mean, I don't know if you think about it the same way as I do. I thought this was the whole Back to the Future 2 episode, meaning,
basically,
hey, let's go ahead and see what happens if things aren't done right and... that, the other thing. And it kind of ended with a Scooby-Doo ending on top of that all, with Puck revealing himself.
Yeah, but that's the other thing. It wasn't just, it was Puck trying to get a magic item so he could appease Oberon.
Oh, yes.
If there's any meaning in it, it's that if you have a powerful item in your possession, people are going to be coming for it, and maybe if it's too powerful to risk falling into wrong hands, you should destroy it because it's too powerful for anyone to have.
Which is what he does.
Oh, there's the Scott's deep meaning of the day.
There it is.
Yeah.
He chucks the Phoenix Gate and into the time stream and just says, let it go endlessly through time. No one should be wielding this anyway.
Yep.
And by that point, when they left Avalon, they had three powerful magic items. They had the Phoenix Gate, which allowed time travel, the Eye of Odin, which allowed a bunch of magic power, and the Arcamorum Grimorum, which was a spell book. When they left, well, the Arcamorum Grimorum, I think, stayed on Avalon or somehow wound up in Xanatos. But Odin got his eye back, and Goliath just got rid of the Phoenix Gate. That tidies everything up. Like, what happened to those items? There you go. Yep. Tied that loose end up.
It was well done. It's, again, good storytelling all around. Made good use of the Puck character. There was a trick ending. They didn't let you know it was a dream until it was a dream. Again, as I said, it's just a really cool episode. Even when they're just doing a really cool episode, they do it with smart writing. All right, let's wrap this up and
rank
it.
Real quick, one final point. Corey asked earlier when we were getting this ready, how is this science fiction? Because there's a lot of science fiction elements, cyborgs, super science, that sort of thing. Is it real soft? Yeah, totally.
See, my argument is the same that you make against all like comic book movies and stuff like that. This is fantasy with sci-fi elements.
Actually, comic books, I say, are modern day
mythology. I'd call it science fantasy, and I'll say the same thing I've always said in this. The genres overlap.
Right. No, I agree. But
a lot of these science fantasy is a great catch-all for all of the fantasy and science fiction, and you moved it into one because most people, there's a huge crossover, and we have this conversation. I'm not sure it matters.
No, I'm not
at
either.
This moment.
It's my little thing with Rage Master over there, because Rage Master always says that Iron Man's not science fiction. It's a good banter. Stuff like that. Yeah, it's just a back and forth.
Iron Man science fiction, by the way. Yeah. All right, anyway, let's wrap this up. Yeah, let's go ahead and rate it. How many claws out of 10?
How many claws out of 10? I give it 9 out of 10 claws. I love Gargoyles. It's a great show, and I'm really glad that we went back and watched it, because now I get to rewatch it again and enjoy it all in a new way. So
I'm going to be hated on this one. I'm going to say it's actually 4 out of 10. And the reason I'm going to say that is because, yes, very smart writing, very smart everything else, but I think it was way too niche. For a person like myself, during the time where this was going on, I was in junior high, I was in high school, I was doing football, I was doing tennis, I was in a band, I was doing everything else. Yes, there was a lot of times to where they had at the... or from the last episode, this is what you saw. It was great, but then again, within how everything was presented here, we were looking at it this way. We went from The Gathering, was sent to me first, and then Future Tense. So I watched it in that order, and I'm like, okay, well, let me see this. And Future Tense actually came right before The Gathering.
Yeah, and, I think.
Well, it did. It was actually the episode directly before
that's
that.
Right, that's right.
So watching it in the way, seeing The Gathering first and then going to Future Tense, the whole last time on Gargoyles really didn't go ahead and give me the complete story of what I was looking for. So being that way, I felt you would have to record it. You would have to see everything else. At the time, I don't think the show really worked for me. Be it on a Netflix or something else today to where I could see it streaming, I think it would work out perfectly. If it was something to where it came out 5 years later, and yes, you'd still be on dial-up internet, but you'd be able to see it on a real player and everything else, I think it would be absolutely fantastic for it. But it was way too far ahead of its time. It was way too in-depth to be able to capture the type of audience to get a broader spectrum of people out there.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, Arch, it's all valid criticism, and to me, though, I'm going to rate it on what it is and what it was trying to be, not what we think it should be or what other things were at the time. For what it was trying to be, which was a smart, heady, well-written science fantasy story and a cartoon and trying to pass it off to kids, it's phenomenal. I will give it a 9 claws out of 10, and it all of that. And the only reason it loses a point is I actually think the animation was kind of underwhelming even for its time, and I don't think the animation holds up so well. And that's where it loses a point. But for the voice acting, the writing, and just the smartness and the headiness of it, I mean, as I said, and to me, this is, you can't take many cartoons and make them into live, adapt the script into a live action movie and have it be good without much editing. And you can take many of these Gargoyles episodes and turn them into a movie and convert them to live action, and they'd work well today with almost minimal rewrites. So that's why I think, you know, it's a phenomenal cartoon. And had this come out 5 years earlier, I would have loved it. Or had it come out today, I'd probably be a huge fan of it.
Well, I'm going to give it about the same as I gave the real Ghostbusters, 9. Blah blah blah, whatever. Just because some of the storytelling is a bit easy at sometimes, and out of the way, Lord Ragemaster rates its 10 claws, 10 swords, 10 greatness high. This was a fantastic show, and indeed, if I were in this world, I would reign supreme.
I think Lord Ragemaster's possessed my chair, too.
I think the portal was trying to take you through.
Indeed, this weakling is in the other side, toughening up, but I shall return. Yay, return one day.
All right, we're going to work on getting Lord Ragemaster back through the portal and keeping Ragemaster Prime here. And if you have comments, you can leave them for us at our website at RavingLunaticMedia.com. You can email us at contact@RavingLunaticMedia.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Malady. Next week, guys.
Rick and Morty! Wabba Labba Dub Dub!
Who is this?
What's
Rick
up, Mike
and Morty?
Lee Plotz?
I think I will need to slay them.
We'll fill you in on it.
I can't wait. This show is awesome.
See you next week.
Keep your contagion, sickies.
And insert exit from commercial now and delete this. Edit. Edit now.
Raving Lunatic Mania!